Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the websites CPR.org and Violinist.com. We have a couple of string instrument questions today. Given that bows for stringed instruments in an orchestra are traditionally made of wood and horsehair, question number one, what color horsehair is preferred in bass instrument bows in an orchestra? Is it A, white, B, black, C, yellow, or D, color doesn't make any difference in sound? And question number two, how many strands of horsehair typically go into a violin bow string? Is it A, about 5 to 10, B, about 150 to 200, or is it C, over 500? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of June the 15th. Well, it was on this day, back in 1843, that Edvard Grieg was born in Norway. He was a pianist, conductor, composer, and a teacher. Besides Grieg, Russian-born composer and pianist Igor Stravinsky was also born on this day, but this time back in 1882. Notable works of his include The Rite of Spring and The Firebird. And it was 51 years ago today, back in 1967, that the Monterey Pop Festival began at Monterey Fairgrounds in Northern California. The festival lasted 3 days. Performers included Jefferson Airplane, The Who, The Grateful Dead, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, The Animals, Otis Redding, Ravi Shankar, and the Mamas and the Papas. And in country music news, we have this article published in Entertainment Weekly, the Summer Preview, issue 2018, entitled Country's Merry Pranksters. However you classify what they do, American roots music, alt country, Americana. Lucinda Williams, Steve Earle, and Dwight Yoakam are three of the most respected musicians in any genre, making a mark on generations of singer-songwriters. They are teaming up to hit the road this summer for the fittingly titled LSD Tour, a hallucinogenic hat tip to their first names. The trio of Grammy winners spoke with EW about shared histories, favorite songs, and what fans who drop in on this run of the show can expect. Articles written by Catherine Terman. So where did the idea for the LSD tour begin? Yoakam says, it sprang forth from Steve and I bumping into each other in 2016. We were at a birthday bash and hadn't seen each other for a few years. We were all talking and I said, why don't we do something together? Earl, Dwight, had the suggestion of me and him, but the next thing I heard, it was me and him and Lou. Lou and I, we do the outlaw country cruises together. We were headed towards something like this, so the two things kind of collided. William says, I think being outliers is what connects me and Steve. Earl says, Lou lived in Nashville about the time I got out of jail in 1994. The first time we saw each other, Emmy Lou Harris was making Wrecking Ball, and someone came up with the idea of everybody playing on the songs they wrote. Well, I spent my 40th birthday playing on Wrecking Ball. I played on Lou's song, Sweet Old World, too. After that, we saw each other around town, Yoakum says. The three of us have reputations that precede us, individually and collectively. We landed on LSD as a fun moniker for the tour, because you don't gotta take nothing. You come see us, you'll be hallucinating. Now, what are some of your favorites of one another's tunes? Yoakum says, Lucinda's Change the Locks is one of my favorite songs. It's brilliant. William says, Aw, I didn't know that. I love Steve's song I sang on You're Still Standing There. And I love the song about the guy on death row, Ellis Unit 1. It's like a troubadour ballad, and it was in that movie with Susan Sarandon, Dead Man Walking. That's a brilliant song. Now, the audience is going to want to see you all on stage together for this tour. Will that happen? Yoakum says, I got a suspicion we're going to end up doing something, some mischief that will make us together. I've got an idea, but you can't tell me? Yoakum says, Nah, I can tell you. We'll probably scrap it after the first night. We'll do it, and the three of us will go, you want to do that again? No, I'm bored with it now. I was thinking about the three of us doing Lowell George and Little Feat's Willin'. That kind of suits the moment, but it's not that. There's plenty of other stuff. Williams adds, I know a Merle Haggard song, and I know a Buck Owens song. And Earl ends up by saying, Lou's band and mine are going to be buddies, and they know each other because we've done the cruises together. We used both bands for a Tom Petty tribute, my band for half, Lou's band for half. This'll really easy and really entertaining, I promise. And in classical music news, we have this review of Shiku Kane Mason's new album called Inspiration, and it's given 3 out of a possible 4 stars. Published in The Week magazine, June the 8th, 2018 issue. Meet classical music's brightest new star. A week after his 3-song performance at the recent royal wedding, 19-year-old British cellist Shiku Kane Mason watched his debut album, Inspiration, climb into Billboard's U.S. pop chart, putting the Nottingham resident and Royal Academy of Music student in the company of Casey Musgraves and Drake. The record, released in January when Kane Mason was still 18 years old, is a 12-track homage to his cellist idols, anchored by a live performance of Shostakovich's challenging Cello Concerto No. 1. Though the slightly fuzzy concert hall recording softened Kane Mason's delivery, nothing masked the authority or technical finesse of his playing, said Jeff Brown in The Times, UK. Bob Marley's No Woman, No Cry is one of the several lighter songs given delightful chamber arrangements, and throughout the album, Kane Mason exhibits beautiful tone as well as the capacity to make a distinct personal statement, which is rarer, said James Manheim in AllMusic.com. This kid is definitely one to watch, and his Shostakovich can stand with anyone's. The weather's getting warmer and more humid, so Miles Davis's performance of the song Summertime introduces our jazz music news. It's an article written by Stephen Thomas Erlewine, and it's from allmusic.com, a review of Miles Davis's song Summertime. Summertime is the centerpiece of Porgy and Bess, one of the greatest and best-known works of George Gershwin. Porgy and Bess was filled with timeless music, but Summertime earned a life outside of the musical, becoming one of the most recorded songs of the 20th century. Hundreds of different versions of the song have been recorded, and since the ballad's melody is so sweet and strong, it sounds good even in pedestrian arrangements. What's remarkable about the song is that it always sounds fresh. Summertime is such a well-constructed song that even when an artist takes liberties with the song, it retains its basic character. Perhaps the best example of this is Miles Davis and Gil Evans' elegant reading from 1958, which emphasized both the song's dual origins as folk song and symphony, all within a distinctly jazz setting. Indeed, Summertime is a favorite of jazz musicians, whether it's a vocalist like Ella Fitzgerald or a clarinet player like Sidney Bechet, because its melody is so indelible and its chords so complex, it lends itself to an endless amount of interpretations. Some of those are certainly lesser than others, but even the poorest renditions of Summertime do nothing to diminish its greatness. And in music research and technology, we have this article written by Steve Knopper, published in Rolling Stone magazine, June 14 to 28, 2018, entitled, The End of Owning Music. The markets for CDs and song downloads have cratered, but vinyl's niche is growing. If you visited Austin's Waterloo Records recently, you might have noticed a construction project that was unthinkable not so long ago. The 36-year-old Austin Music staple was replacing 24 feet of CD racks with space for more vinyl. After 30 years of CDs, a lot of people are moving on from that format, says Waterloo owner John Kuntz. Whether they're going back to vinyl or streaming, people are selling off those CDs. As streaming gives the music industry its biggest profits in a decade, the CD business continues to plunge. CD sales have fallen 80% in the past decade, from roughly 450 million to 89 million. Since Tesla began manufacturing cars without CD players, other companies like Ford and Toyota have recently followed. Downloads, once seen as the CD's replacement, have plummeted 58% since peaking in 2012. Their profits now even smaller than physical sales. Artists have taken note. Bruce Springsteen released his latest box set, The Album, Collection Volume 2, 1987 to 1996, exclusively on vinyl with no CD option. Unlike 2014's Volume 1, it's a streaming world and a vinyl world with a quickly diminishing CD, says Daniel Glass, president of Glass Note Records, indie label home of Mumford & Sons in Phoenix. Jack White, arguably the most visible vinyl advocate in recent years, agrees. I definitely believe the next decade is going to be streaming plus vinyl. Streaming in the car and kitchen, vinyl in the living room and the den. Those will be the two formats, and I feel really good about that. Who's still buying CDs? The Walmart customer, says Glass, adding that sales are still strong in country, greatest hits, soundtracks, and baby records. In the country world, Chris Stapleton's second LP sold an impressive 373,000 physical releases last year. CDs are also doing fine in some international markets. In Japan, where streaming has been slow to take off, 72% of last year's music sales were physical. When vinyl sales started to climb in 2006, some experts saw it as a fad. No longer. Those sales hit a 25-year high last year, and labels are investing in more sophisticated packaging than ever, such as Concord's Concert for George, which was just released for a first time on vinyl. Featuring Jeff Lynne-approved lacquers, Rhino put out a 5-LP 1969 Grateful Dead Fillmore West set, which sold out instantly. White's label, Third Man, recently opened its own pressing plant in Detroit with the first newly built vinyl presses in 35 years. It's really important for preservation of not just historical music, but new music coming out right now, says White. Vinyl is written in stone. I think if it's made it for 120 years now, it's here forever. That's a beautiful thing to think about. And in rock and pop music news, we have this review published in Rolling Stone magazine, June 28, 2018 issue. It's a review of Dave Matthews Band new CD, Come Tomorrow, RCA. 3.5 stars it's given. The jam rock veteran continues on an introspective singer-songwriter path. The first Dave Matthews Band album in 6 years has elements of their jammy lineage. See the funky Can't Stop and She, a faux metal stomper where Matthews growls, "She hypnotized me with her groove." Mostly, though, he leans on his mature singer-songwriter side, getting quiet, contemplative, and unusually sweet on songs both Lush, Here On Out, and Spare, Black and Bluebird. He dips into his love for Sting, Virginia in the Rain, and Peter Gabriel, Again and Again. Highlights include the towering Idea of You, which might be Matthew's most radio-ready song since Crash Into Me, and Samurai Cop, Oh Joy Begin, where he lofts an ode to the wonder of child-rearing over Carter Beaufort's crisp drumming and Tim Reynolds' bright guitar solo. It's a nice balance of his band's big tent musicality and his own living room sensitivity. And in local music news, we have this, Classics Under the Stars. Wesley Schultz, the conductor. That's coming up Saturday, June the 16th at 7:30 p.m. in the Booth Amphitheater, Cary. And this is all part of Summerfest 2018. Phone 919-733-2750 or simply go to ncsymphony.org for more information and tickets. The symphony shares great moments in classical music, including Mozart's The Magic Flute and Eine kleine Nachtmusik, Rossini's The Barber of Seville, and Berlioz's Roman Carnival Overture, coming up this weekend, June the 16th. That's Classic Under the Stars. So go out and hear the classics performed by the symphony out of the Coca Booth Amphitheater in Cary this weekend. Speaking of local music news, we also need to note that pre-registration is now underway for Pinecones Bluegrass Camps for Youth June 18 through 22, and Bluegrass Jam Camp, July 30th through August the 3rd. Pinecone members who are not Town of Cary residents must speak directly to Teresa Dolan in order to redeem those benefits. You will not be able to do so by web, by mail, or any other facility, or at the Page Walker when Teresa is not present. Just call 919-460-4963 to learn more information about those camps. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, given that bows for stringed instruments in an orchestra are traditionally made of wood and horsehair, what color horsehair is preferred in bass instrument bows in an orchestra? Is it A, white, B, black, C, yellow, or D, color doesn't make any difference in sound? Correct answer is answer B, black. As noted in an article in the website CPR.org, Colorado Public Radio, titled 10 Facts About Horsehair String Player's Bow by David Rutherford, published on the 20th of April, 2014. Whenever you go to an orchestra concert, you're hearing and watching a wonderful mix of our current modern world and the old world. Even though there are modern-made instruments in the string section being played in front of you, the design comes from the peak of violin making dating back 400 years or more. One aspect of the old world most people don't think about, however, is that all-important hair used for the bow. It is stretched into a thin ribbon applied with rosin, especially processed tree resin, and drawn across the strings to set the strings in vibration. Here are 10 things you didn't know about all that horsehair on stage. Number 1, the hair comes from the tails of horses in really cold climates such as Siberia, Mongolia, and Canada. The cold climate causes the horses to produce hair that is thicker and stronger than that produced by horses in warmer climates. Number 2, white hair is used almost exclusively by the upper string players, while black hair is often used by the lower strings. Low string players will also sometimes use a salt and pepper mixture. Black hair is more coarse, so it's able to grab the larger strings of the lower instruments better. To be honest, some people say that this distinction is minimal at best, but bass players who use black hair will tell you otherwise. Number 3, white hair actually comes from white horses. Bleaching damages the hair, and professional players will never use that. White hair ranges from white to light tan, and some hair has a color shift through the length of the hair. This hair is less expensive, since hair with no color shift is more highly prized. Number 4, of all the hair in a horse's tail, only a small fraction is good enough to use in bows. All the hair is dressed multiple times, meaning that any imperfect hairs are removed. The hair is cleaned and organized by length. Number 5, most horse hair is harvested from the slaughterhouse, not from living horses. Number 6, even though there are millions of stringed instruments, bows, in the U.S., the hair used for them represents only a small fraction of the horse hair industry. The vast majority of the hair from the horse's tail is used for other purposes, such as fine art paintbrushes, fabrics, jewelry, pottery, fishing line, and fly tying. Number 7, the choice a string player makes of who rehairs their bow is extremely personal. It is a matter of trust. A string player must trust his or her $8,000, give or take, bow to a luthier who will dress the hair a final time from the hank and use only the very finest quality. Number 8. Rehairing a bow is as much an art as it is a craft. Each luthier has his own or her own way of tying knots to hold the ends together or cutting the wedges to secure the hair. This is to say nothing about the art of working with finicky string players, who will then spend 800 to 1,000 hours playing with that hair. Number 9, in many climates, a rehair job is necessary at least twice a year. The temperature and humidity changes drastically from summer to winter. Hot, muggy weather causes the hair to stretch, which may make it impossible to tighten enough on the bow. In the winter, the hair dries and contracts, sometimes making it impossible to loosen the hair of the bow enough to relax the tension on the stick. And number 10, there are synthetic substitutes for horsehair. They are awful, truly awful. Even beginners can tell the difference. Old world horsehair is still the very best material to use to get the very best modern sound out of all those wonderful old world instruments. And the answer to our second question, how many strands of horsehair typically go into the violin bow string? Is that A, about 5 to 10? Is it B, about 150 to 200? Or is it C, over 500? And the correct answer is answer B, between 150 and 200 strands of horsehair. The website, violinist.com, notes that the wood chosen for the bow is also important. While expensive bows can cost thousands of dollars, much cheaper bows are adequate, especially for beginners. Bows do affect sound quality, but more importantly, they affect your technique quite a bit. Certain things are harder or impossible with a cheap bow. So, let's close out today's program with a bit of horsehair bow music in honor of Edvard Grieg's birthday today. This is his Morning Mood, which he composed for his fellow Norwegian playwright Henrik Ibsen's drama Peer Gynt. Grieg, by the way, had some misgivings once he started on this very complex and long Ibsen drama Peer Gynt. But it was about a fellow Norwegian, and Ibsen was a fellow Norwegian, so he couldn't say no. We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me. Randy Thompson at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.